The following program is paid for by Cobalt Mortgage. Cobalt Mortgage, Inc., NMLS 35653, is an equal opportunity housing lender. Tina Mitchell, MLO number 145420, and Mike Mercer, MLO number 175644, are licensed loan originators with Cobalt Mortgage. Go to cobaltmortgage.com or call 1-877-220-4663 for cost information.
You're listening to The Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer. Now, in the studio, local mortgage and finance experts Tina Mitchell and Mike Mercer.
Welcome to The Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer, the Sunday, August 18th show. I'm Tina Mitchell, Mortgage Diva, and sitting to my left is my co-host, Mike Mercer. The Mike what? Master.
The mortgage master, yeah.
Got a little tongue twisted
you
there for a second.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, how could I do that? Thank you, everyone, for taking time to talk money today. Mike and I are here every Sunday at 11 a.m. right here on 570 KVI. We're proud to provide you the news on everything money, bringing in expert advice and inside knowledge on today's events in our local economy and how they can affect your money. If you'd like any information on the topics that we discuss in today's show, please call us at 1-888-987-0570 or online at themoneyhour.com, because we have some awesome guests in studio, both experienced guests, been in studio many times. I'm proud to say that we have our own King County assessor, Lloyd Herrer, that's going to be our first guest in studio. What are property taxes based on? What do you want to know about property taxes? What do you want to know about the assessment of your house and the value? Well, we're going to go through all of those answers with Lloyd in studio today as our first guest. And second guest in studio, another regular contributor of our show, is Amy Carpenter with Solterra Systems. Why are so many people excited about installing solar panels on their home? Well, the big deal, I think, is saving a lot of money. What about that electric bill and not having one? Or a little electric bill. That'd
like
be kind of awesome,
no-brainer.
Right?
Yeah. And it sounds like there's a lot of new incentives, too. So
lots of new incentives. So really happy to have Amy back on our show again as a regular contributor, providing awesome information to our listeners on how to save money. And that's what the show is about saving money, right?
That's right.
Yep. Again, great information. Fantastic guests. Write down the phone number, 1-888-987-0570. 1-888-987-0570, because you'll definitely want to connect with us to talk a little bit more about our guest. And Mike, I think we might start out the show, of course, with some money chat.
Money chat.
Money, money, money.
Well, I came across this article. It was written by this gal. Her name is Tara Nicole Nelson. She's a real estate contributor with Inman News. And somebody had written into her, a gal had written in her to ask her a question. And the whole basis of the article is, how do you get out of a purchase contract? You know, if you write an offer on a deal, can you get out of it? How do you go about doing it? You know, when can you do it? When can you not do it? That sort of thing. So the person had wrote in, and her question was, I have a contract on a home to purchase, but I have changed my mind. Can I back out prior to the closing without any penalty or, repercussions? And, the author of the article, Tara Nelson, had commented back this, that as often as it does, depends first on the formalities. Depending upon your state, it's highly likely that the real estate purchase contract you signed offers some sort of an out with conditions. In some states, these are known as contingencies, like here in Washington, for example. Basically, contractual provisions that allow the buyer to back out of the deal within a set number of days. These provisions usually also give the buyer the access and opportunity to have the property inspected and appraised, to have her loan underwritten, in this example, we're talking about a gal, and to undo the deal without penalty. If her loan is not approved or the property condition does not meet her standards within the agreed upon contingency period, usually around 2 weeks, plus or minus a couple of days by default, but the time period itself is fully negotiable between the buyer and the seller. So in other states, the relevant provisions provide an objection period in which the buyer must voice her objections or intent to back out or forever hold her peace, so to say. At the end of an objection period, a buyer usually retains the right to back out, but will forfeit any earnest money deposited she placed on the property if she bails. At the end of the contingency period, the buyer must either So here we go. Remove the contingency signaling that she plans to close the deal and rendering her deposit non-refundable if she doesn't. Exercise the contingency, basically killing the deal, or request an extension of the contingency until her outstanding due diligence is complete. Those are the basics, but there are two important caveats. If you happen to be buying a distressed property, if you are in contract on a short sale, your contingency or obligation, your contingency or objection period likely doesn't even begin to elapse until you've received the bank's approval for the deal. If you change your mind before that happens, chances are good that you can back out penalty free. On the flip side, if you're in contract to buy a bank-owned property and you're in contingency state, chances are good that the bank has effectively converted the contingency period into an objection period so that your deposit becomes instantly non-refundable if you haven't backed out of the deal by the end of the contingency period. Hopefully, you know where your own contract falls within the above schemes. If not, check with your agent or attorney to understand whether you can actually back out under the terms of your contract with the seller without penalty. With that said, just because you can't back out doesn't mean, or I'm sorry, with that said, just because you can back out doesn't mean that you should. Buying a home is a sort of like getting married, and that anyone who takes it seriously will have a moment or a day or a week of quick doubt.
I love nice that. Comparison.
I love that. In the fact that a few $1,000 penalty would sway your decision in favor of moving forward with the transaction, that might be a sign that you desire to back out is just buyer's remorse. Alternatively, if you're in contract on a short sale and you're not sure actually that you can or will close, you happen to have found another property like that, like for example, that you like better at the right price, that is more certain to close, i.e. not a short sale, you change your mind, make the decision that makes more sense. So that's kind of understandable. The inavailability of the buyer's remorse at the prospect of such a major commitment as a mortgage is why she's suggesting to buyers to be actually to write down kind of their visions of their ideal home. Getting clear on what they want their lives to look like on a daily basis once they own that home they envision, and determining what characteristics, features, and amenities a home would need to have to facilitate that vision. I think this is great advice. When buyer's remorse rears its head at that time, it can be a useful exercise to revisit any of those written documentations that you have on what your original wants and needs and priorities or vision was. Compare the home against that, and then use the comparison to kind of, deal with any of the emotional freakouts that you might be inclined to have or to back out irrationally, or supply logic and reason to a rational decision to cancel the contract. I think that's a great idea. So basically, You have something you can kind of go back and look and say, like a checkpoint, does this location meet all the things that were really important to us in the beginning? And if it pretty much does, then you should feel pretty comfortable moving forward. If you're able to go back and look to see what was originally important and realize that, man, this house doesn't really meet those needs, then it might be the time to activate looking ways to get out of the contract, right?
Yeah, and I think that's a really great advice, especially in this market right now, because there really is, there's no time to think. If you want to make an offer on a home, you've got to do it right away, and you don't want to rush into it. We're talking about a lot of money. So planning ahead of time and having the things that you want, with the priorities of the home, the location, and really making sure that you go through those and understand that this is a must. If the house doesn't meet it, then I'm not going to make the offer. Here's things I'm willing to sacrifice. Get that all planned out and strategically planned ahead of time, so when you're ready to move, you're ready to move. Because here what is happening a lot, and I can't give advice, Mike, we can't either way, and a realtor can't give too much opinion advice on this, but just give options. I mean, really, that's what it is about, is options.
Right.
Is these contingencies are getting waived, and the big ones are your inspection contingency and your finance contingency. And so what a lot of buyers are doing is they're going in and waiving inspection contingency. I don't know anybody, well, I know there probably is somebody, but very few people would ever buy a home without an inspection. But what they're doing is they're paying for that home inspection ahead of time so that they can waive the contingency versus having it not getting their offer accepted. The finance contingency, whole nother story in waiving finance contingency, because there's such huge risk there. But,
yep. Unless you're dead certain.
You're dead certain, and that means you're paying cash for the home, because anything can happen.
Yeah. And she said, kind of in wrapping up, she said, if a serious problem with your job the loan or health or life is what's making you want to back out of the deal, right? Sometimes there's circumstances that come up. You just then, of course, you're going to want to look at maybe getting out of the deal, whether you pay that penalty.
And that's where the financing comes in. All those things you just mentioned, that's where the finance issues come in. Yeah.
Yep. So, you know, she said that, you know, she's personally worked with buyers whose marriages broke up or jobs that were lost during escrow.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen that actually happen. But after removing their contingencies, they were happy to leave the transaction and actually even forfeit their deposit, knowing that doing so allowed them to escape kind of the greater evil.
Yeah.
Right?
And again, it depends. I mean, some of these deposits, now we're talking earnest money. I mean, geez, Mike, we're seeing 10, 15 grand coming over on a $300,000 home.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous just because it's so competitive out there. But I guess the point of it is really being educated, understanding you have contingencies, you have protections in the contract, being strategic and really planning out what's important to you. And deciding if you're going to go for it or not go for it.
Yep.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Awesome money chat. I thought I'd bring in today mortgage insurance companies back in black after the housing crash. Mortgage insurance companies lost a combined $20 billion. And those were the ones that actually survived through the crisis. The private mortgage insurance company industry was leveled by the housing crash, obviously, but the companies that didn't go under and finally, or they're finally digging their way out and reaching some profitability for the first time in 6 years. Private mortgage insurance, for those of you that don't know, you might hear it referenced to as PMI or MI. PMI being private mortgage insurance, and that's where your conventional financing. MI being mortgage insurance. Well, you'll hear that for HUD or FHA. It's required to pay it when you're coming in with less than a 20% down payment. The comeback in is being fueled by lower mortgage delinquencies and growing business, especially as the Federal Housing Administration or FHA has began to pull back. So FHA, which during the housing boom backed just 3% of new mortgages or new loans, took on 80% of the market during the crash. I mean, that's a huge, significant difference, 3% to 80%. Leaving private mortgage insurancers with little new business. Now that FHA has been consistently raising their premiums, and we've talked about this a few times in studio during Money Chat, being that there was so much foreclosure on HUD properties or FHA loans, mainly because they're the lower down payment, lower credit criteria, a lot easier qualifying. They had a lot higher default rate. So because of that, they needed to build up their reserve in order to continue to lend for FHA financing. So that was the increase of their premiums. With that, the private mortgage insurance or the PMI companies were able to come back in the market and start profiting. Now, there are now six private mortgage insurancers, which together wrote nearly $49 billion in new business for the second quarter, up 27% from the first quarter, according to the data from Inside Mortgage Finance. Now, of the publicly traded insurancers, MGIC, Genworth, Mike and I, we use United Guaranty a lot. Yeah. And you really, as a consumer, you don't really a lot of times understand that there's multiple mortgage insurance companies out there. Another topic for conversation to really understand, because it depends on your qualification. They're all going to have different pricing structures on that. Again, another conversation, but they all reported positive income, with Radian still trailing back a little bit of the negative territory. Now, privately held Essent Guaranty, which is a new coming into the mortgage insurance industry, haven't really used them for a lot of our clients, haven't found the pricing has been anything better. So I've been sticking to the ones that have been around longer. But $10 billion in new business through the first half versus $3.6 billion in the year earlier period, according to the Inside Mortgage Finance. Delinquencies are down. Companies have recapitalized, and at the same time, again, FHA in reducing its role in the market. So this has given significant growth opportunities. Now, the companies have reversed their position and are starting to show some modest profitability. Now, why is this important to a consumer? Maybe listening, well, you know, who really cares if the mortgage insurance companies are making money? Well, it's important because without mortgage insurance companies, which are there to back in case a consumer defaults on their mortgage, it makes the banks confident in lending you money without having that 20% equity. So if they're not making money and they don't exist, then we go back to having to have a 20% down payment. So that's why this is important. The private insurances have also benefited from government housing bailouts, the refinance program from underwater borrowers, as well as the Home Affordable Modification Program, or HAMP. Both helped borrowers make their monthly payments and stay current on their loans. Although HAMP has come under fire recently, as a report from the Troubled Asset Relief Program's Inspector General found that the program had high default rate, still it was better than not having it at all. So that helped in the mortgage insurance companies as well with their profitability. Now, without those programs, it would have been a lot worse. Most of the borrowers would have been delinquent and would have foreclosed, which ultimately would have cost the mortgage insurance companies a lot of money to bail out of that process. Now, private insurers also could benefit in the future as Congress prepares to wind down mortgage giants, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Another topic of conversation, I promise to you, all of our listeners out there, we will definitely bring that in future shows, because it's an interesting conversation to have as they're talking about scaling back with Fannie and Freddie. So that's what I got for Money Chat. Awesome, awesome beginning of the show. But coming up next on the Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer, you will not want to miss our own personal King County assessor, Lloyd Harrow, is here with us in studio to answer a lot of questions you may have about the role of our assessor, home evaluations, and property taxes right here on 570 KVI after this short break.
Isn't it time you start getting what you want? I'm Jason Watacha, owner of Noble Ridge Construction, specialist in custom home building and remodeling. It's time to make yourself happy and create the home that fits your desires and style. That process starts by visiting us at NobleRidgeConstruction.com or follow us on Facebook to get inspired. You can also see featured custom lots available, architects, and Signature Series homes for sale by us. NobleRidgeConstruction.com. That's NobleRidgeConstruction.com. Dreams begin here.
Are you behind on your mortgage payments and unsure about the road ahead? Magnum Law Group helps families just like yours navigate through the foreclosure avoidance process. Are you underwater on your home and unsure what to do? Magnum Law Group will help you understand your options. Are you facing foreclosure and need to stop a trustee sale? Magnum Law Group has success in doing this and may be able to help you too. If you're tired of dealing with the banks and getting turned down for loan modification, Magnum Law Group will take on the banks for you and lead you through the process for the best possible outcome. They lead the competition with superior knowledge and expertise.
This is Craig from Magnum. You can reach us at 425-605-6393 or at www.magnumlawgroup.com. See you at the next seminar.
Here's amazing news from Solterra Systems. Install solar in your home right now and save 50 to 90%. That's right. Incentives cover 50 to 90% of your cost. Here's Amy Carpenter.
Go Solar and Washington State will pay you for all the energy you create, even if you use it in your own home. Get on the fast track to free energy with zero down financing. These incentives end soon, so call us today.
Call Solterra Systems for a free site assessment. 800-865-9005 or useyourroof.com. That's useyourroof.com.
This is the Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Now, back to the show with local mortgage and finance experts Tina Mitchell and Mike Mercer.
Welcome back to the Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer here on 570 KVI every Sunday at 11 a.m. And of course, the purpose of our show is to educate our listeners on what's really going on in our local real estate market and financial arena. You can reach Tina and me anytime at 1-888-987-0570 or online at themoneyhour.com. Again, that's 1-888-987-0570 or online at themoneyhour.com.
And I'm excited to have King County Assessor Lloyd Hare in studio for the first time actually here on 570 KVI. And actually got a commitment from him and the office that we might be able to have him in studio every other month. So pretty awesome that we have him here as part of our show. Again, he is our King County Assessor. Hare's respected veteran public official, was elected assessor November 3rd, 2009. He has a record as a tireless advocate of taxpayers and champions in and openness of transparency from government agencies. He most recently served as Seattle Port Commissioner, bringing new levels of accountability and leadership change to the port. Lloyd, I'm just excited. I love having you across me in studio and just being here to share your wealth of knowledge with our listeners. And I know that you were probably one of the most busy people. So taking time and physically, personally being here, really appreciate it.
Yeah, well, welcome.
Tina and Mike, it's always a pleasure to be with you and to be here with your new venue at KVI. So that's great.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I looked up this definition, and it says that a tax assessor is a local government official who estimates the value of real property within a city or town. This value is converted into an assessment. So can you explain how you come up with the assessment?
Well, we come up with three methods as to value property. One is by market or by sales. Number two, by income. And number three, by cost. For residential homeowners, we primarily do it by market. So we analyze what's been happening in the local market within King County and come up with a appraised value based on the current activity. For example, for the 2013 tax this year, our value date is January 1st, 2012.
And I think that's important because most people don't know it's 12 months behind.
That's correct. So that is our assessment date that is set by statute. Mm-hmm. And then we look at all sales for 2011, 10, and 9. And we roll that into a composite figure that we basically use 88 characteristics for residential properties, mm-hmm. and roll that into a computer algorithm that comes up with kind of an average mean value. And so that's currently how we do it for residential. For commercial, we primarily look at income, and that is done based on the capitalization rate. And quite frankly, we're starting to see cap rates that are below 5%, which is very strong.
Wow.
You know, a few years ago during the major portion of the recession, you know, we were talking about tens.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's a vast improvement. And then we also look at buildings that are under construction, just like looking outside the studio here. We see a huge apartment complex mm-hmm. going up. So we'll value that on July 31st of the year and come up with an estimated completion value at that point. So it could be 50% completed. We'll put approximately 50% value on that to bring it in the current year.
Makes sense. So, Lloyd, with the new evaluations are coming out on for residential, what should we really expect?
Well, we're currently in the process of valuing properties now.
Mm-hmm.
We send out a postcard that starts around late May, and we generally get done with the sending out of the postcards by early October. So this is the window that you have to take a look at your values. We've sent out many already,
okay.
And so a lot of homeowners have already received their 2013 valuation notice. Throughout King County this year, on average, from the ones that we have processed, we're seeing around a 7.5% increase in value. Now, that's on average. Now, you know, you could be in a certain district where maybe a value went up by 25%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or you could be in another area where the value, in fact, decreased by 2 or 3 or 4% over the previous year's value. So there is a wide range within King County.
Yeah, big county.
It is.
You have a lot of range here. You know, there's been a lot of upgrades and advancements to the online appeal process. Can you talk a little bit about this?
That is true. This year, for the 2013 tax year, for going for 2014 and the 2013 values, you can go online now, and we have an online system. It takes you through your basic property, and it brings up the characteristics for that, And then in your neighborhood, you can pick out similar types of characteristics as to your subject property. It will do the comparison for you. It will bring all, you know, properties down or parcels that you look at. And then you can pick and choose and say, well, yeah, I want to use these three or four as my comparisons. We also have a tax calculator in there. And that will also say, okay, if I think my value is, say, just for example, $10,000 less than what we have appraised it for, mm-hmm. then you can say, oh, okay, this is approximately the amount of potential tax that I may save if I win fully when I go to the Board of Equalization. There's no guarantee when you go to the Board of Equalization and you appeal your property.
And I like how you mentioned that, Lloyd, because there isn't a guarantee. So when you look at that, run that calculator, you see the minor difference that it's really going to make. Is it worth the time to try to feel and appeal in a fight?
That's true. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like any appraisal, I mean, there's some art and some science
sure.
that's intermixed. And, you know, you may have a, you know, your appraisal, just like when you go get a bank loan, you know, they have an appraiser that comes out and they try to set their value as to what they feel the property is worth. Obviously, our appraisers do the same thing.
Sure.
A lot of it, you know, in our case, is computer-driven for residential primarily.
So if you want information, just go to kingcounty.gov and you can get all of the tools and the access to everything that you have to offer at the office, correct?
It's kingcounty.gov /assessor, and you can go back and get on our website,
mm-hmm.
and we have a section there dealing with appeals, electronic appeals. Our most popular site is what we call eReal Property.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting around 5 million page views a month.
I'm starting to use that to look at values for my clients since I've learned about it.
Well, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
And it's increasing in the usability all the time,
mm-hmm.
because it's up 24/7. As long as our server system is fully operational.
Which I'm sure you guys are all good.
Yeah. Well, no, we try to make sure that it's up 100% of the time. But, you know, like I say. But it gives you, you know, truly an opportunity. And a lot of people just, once they get on it, you know, they really search around and take uh-huh. a lot of page views of various properties.
I haven't been on there. What is it? It's eReal?
Yeah, eReal Property.
eReal Property.
Yeah, it's really great data. It's nice to do that comparison. And Lloyd, I can't help, but you know, Mike and I need to talk to you about a little bit about what's happening now. Obviously, with property values increasing, it's going to affect taxes. With quantitative easing tapering and talking about what's going to happen in September, interest rates are already starting to increase. Now, I know Mike and I like to look at the glass half full, not half empty. And when the economy is strong, that's when you see interest rates go up. The economy's not doing so well. You see the interest rates go down. What's your opinion? What's your thought? What's your crystal ball have to say about rates, property values? What are you seeing?
Well, maybe I should sit in Benenke's chair. about rates. But, you know, I mean, the signs are there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've seen a full 100 basis points, you know, within the last couple of months, you know, on the average.
Sometimes in the last couple of days.
Well, even to a
depending
certain.
Depending on, yeah.
Yeah, you're right. But on the other hand, it does impact those that are looking at a house.
Yep.
Say you're looking at a $300,000 house, for example, and by virtue of the 100 basis points increase,
mm-hmm.
it may drop your rating down. You only look for a $270,000 house now.
Yeah, 100 basis points probably equaled about 0.25% rate.
Right, mm-hmm. exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it does impact the market out there. But one of the things that's been fortunate here is that since we are such a strong employment center, mm-hmm. and our unemployment rate is very low compared to the rest of the country, is that there's a strong correlation between employment, full employment, and the housing market.
Yes, there is.
Okay, and we all know that. Those are the ones that are in real estate, mm-hmm. understand that.
Mm-hmm.
So as a consequence, there's a great deal of demand, and by virtue of the supply, it's still somewhat limited.
Sure.
And as we're coming out of the recession, a lot of folks are saying, well, maybe I can take another look, possibly to sell my house because it's now above the watermark.
Yeah, yeah.
Below water, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you feel a little more comfortable about potentially selling. The other element is we're trying to work through the foreclosure inventory.
Mm-hmm.
And banks are smart enough to understand that relationship, too. So,
sure.
You know, we're seeing more and more properties potentially come into the market. Those areas that I mentioned that they're having trouble recovering were areas where there was a high level of foreclosures.
Got it.
Or short sales at one end.
Yeah. And you know, the interesting with rates, and it's so hard to predict is, you know, when quantitative easing backing and tapering out on that, we saw the instant increase in interest rates. And then as the mention started, you know, continuing to talk and people are pulling out of the stock market, then all of a sudden we saw the bond market improving and interest rates going back down again. So it's just interesting how that that balance works out.
I was going to talk about, or I had a question in regards to, you know, for a lot of our new listeners about the levies, you know, that the levies that they vote for and kind of how that affects the property taxes.
And the percentage of our taxes are based, I mean, I think majority of people feel the taxes are just based on the value of the home or a huge portion, where that's not the case.
That's correct. In Washington State, we are what we call a revenue-based state. And it's determined by the budgets that are adopted by the taxing districts of where they live.
Mm-hmm.
In Seattle, for example, your school board, your city of Seattle, your county, your port, basically are the primary drivers of the basic amount of property tax that's collected. However, how many times do we go to the ballot to vote for special levies?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just passed one here in King County at the primary. For the King County Parks Levy, which is levied countywide. So that has an impact, and that levy approximately doubled the amount of money that they needed compared to the old levy that was there.
And so what are we talking about, the increase in taxes?
Yeah, so it has an impact.
Mm-hmm.
Say your house increases by 15%.
Okay.
Does that mean your property tax will increase by 50%? No. It probably means that maybe your house might increase by 3% because
okay.
We are a revenue-based state. And cities and the taxing jurisdictions are limited to 1% growth in income by state statute.
Okay.
And then anything over and above that is caused by special levies. We have certain neighborhoods throughout the county where over 50% of their property tax is voter approved.
Wow.
So
pay attention to those levies and what you're
voting
for.
You need to take a hard look as to what you're voting on. You know, it's important that we have strong schools, you know, that we have strong park systems, etc. But then people have a choice as to what level that they want to vote for.
Yeah. So Lloyd, what about some special levies that are coming up? And we've got just a couple minutes left. Is there any that you want to bring into studio, let our listeners know about?
Well, this fall we will have a few. We have some fire districts that are coming up for some special levies. A few others where they have what we call levy lid lifts to lift the values back up to the tax back up so they can get their full value of their from their jurisdiction. And so, you know, we'll see a few of those. It's kind of spotty for the general.
Mm-hmm.
The big one, like I said, for the primary was the King County Parks Levy.
Okay.
Yeah. So maybe you can touch on real quick the higher end homes increasing at such a faster pace than, you know, the lower end properties.
Well, that's true. We see high end areas right now, the demand and the prices that are being paid by people is substantially greater than the low-end properties. And, you know, I'm talking about million-dollar homes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like anywhere in the economy, those, you know, who have the money, have put their money in the stock market, have done extremely well. And so if you see a property that you really like and it's on the market, you'll be out there bidding it up.
Sure.
And
yeah.
That's exactly what's happened. So, you know, when you go to communities like Hunts Point, Yarrow Bay,
yep.
or Laurelhurst, et cetera, those properties are increasing at a faster rate than, say, for example, like Skyway or other neighborhoods where the value of those homes that are there are
not as many people are bidding and willing to drive to pay more for that property.
That's correct.
Yeah.
So, Lloyd, what are some misconceptions? What's the biggest misconception that people have about taxes, the assessment office?
Well, the first one is, regardless of what happens to the value of property, there is not a one-to-one relationship between them.
Okay.
And so, maybe I keep telling my friends, it's a good thing that values are increasing.
Uh-huh.
Does not mean your property taxes will go up to the equivalency of the value of your property.
That is a very good thing.
Okay. And the same thing occurred when the values were going down.
Mm-hmm.
That did not mean that your taxes would go down either.
And so when values go down and taxes go up, the reason is?
Primarily because of special
levies.
Yeah. So
it all comes back to those levies.
Yeah, it comes back to the levies. And it gets back down, quite frankly, the level of services that people demand in this area.
Mm-hmm.
And I think is a general comment. I think people here get a pretty good level of government for amount that they pay. We rank 29th out of the 50 states in property tax.
Wow.
Interesting.
And we have no income tax.
Yeah. Wow.
Good
it is an awesome place to live. And Lloyd, again, thank you so much for coming in. I know that you're out and about all day long educating people on taxes and what the office does. And again, I just so much appreciate you sharing your time with our listeners.
Well, it's always great to be here, and we look forward to coming back
to the
next
calendar.
Show.
We got you on the calendar for a few more times. Coming up next in the Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer, if you want to learn about solar and how it can save you money, we have in studio regular contributor of our show, Amy Carpenter with Solterra Systems, right here after the short break on 570 KVI.
Here's amazing news from Solterra Systems. Install solar in your home right now and save 50 to 90%. That's right. Incentives cover 50 to 90% of your cost. Here's Amy Carpenter.
Go Solar in Washington State will pay you for all the energy you create, even if you use it in your own home. Get on the fast track to free energy with zero down financing. These incentives end soon, so call us today.
Call Solterra Systems for a free site assessment. 800-865-9005 or useyourroof.com. That's useyourroof.com.
Isn't it time you start getting what you want? I'm Jason Watacha, owner of Noble Ridge Construction, specialist in custom home building and remodeling. It's time to make yourself happy and create the home that fits your desires and style. That process starts by visiting us at NobleRidgeConstruction.com or follow us on Facebook to get inspired. You can also see featured custom lots available, architects, and signature series homes for sale by us. NobleRidgeConstruction.com. That's NobleRidgeConstruction.com. Dreams begin here.
This is the Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Now, back to the show with local mortgage and finance experts Tina Mitchell and Mike Mercer.
Welcome back to the Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer here on 570 KVI every Sunday at 11 a.m. Of course, the purpose of our show is to educate our listeners on what's really going on around our local real estate and financial markets. You can reach Tina and me anytime at 1-888-987-0570 or online at themoneyhour.com. Again, that's 1-888-987-0570 or online at themoneyhour.com.
And being that's the Money Hour, we love giving money advice, but we always love to also tell you how to save money. And our next guest in studio, that is her sole purpose and her company, is to save our listeners money. Amy Carpenter works for Solterra Systems. Amy's a solar design consultant and the marketing director for Solterra Systems. She's been helping homeowners and businesses in the Northwest become more energy efficient, independent for the last 5 years. Solterra Systems is an electrical and roofing company. They specialize in innovative rooftops and have been active in the Northwest since 2008. They've grown 100% a year and have won numerous awards. They design and install solar electric systems as well as install composite, metal, and flat roof systems. 100% growth, Amy. How in the heck do you guys do that?
I really think it's a testament of the industry. You know, people in our area are really interested in adding solar to their roof, becoming a little more energy independent. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, there's a little bit to do with our customer experience and how we run our business. But I think the owner of our company has been super smart with how he's ran the company since it started. He mm-hmm. was smart with not taking on a lot of debt, slept on the office couch for the first 2 years,
wow.
you know, bootstrapped it to begin with so that we could have a sustainable business growth model in the future.
That's awesome.
Wow, we might need to invest 100% growth
there
per year. Let us know when you guys go public.
I mean, a successful startup should grow at that rate, I think, but you know.
Yeah.
It's been exciting for sure.
Well, we've had you in studio, several times, and you're a fantastic regular contributor to our show. But you know, for the new listeners that maybe have not heard us talk with you before, maybe you could kind of just start off with explaining the benefits of solar energy.
Sure, I think every homeowner and/or business that we work with has a slightly different reason or motivation for doing solar, but ultimately most of our customers are just interested in gaining some independence from what our rates are today and what our rates are going to do in the future. Investing in solar is basically putting a power source on your roof. It's something that you own outright, and so over time you can never be billed for power that you generate on your roof, and you can never be billed a rate increase on anything that you're generating yourself. So over the long term, you know, cost savings on electricity will only become more substantial as our rates go up. So I think that's one of the biggest reasons people do solar. Increase in home value or property value is factored in there in some ways, but it's a little harder to quantify that. So, mm-hmm. you know, having a lower electric bill every month is definitely something that people look forward to, and being able to watch your utility meter run backwards, which does actually happen here in the Northwest.
That's really awesome.
it's a unique thing to see, and you know that at that point you're getting credited from the utility for producing power and pushing it onto the grid. And that's kind of a unique and exciting thing as well.
And it really does work in Washington.
Yes, it does. That's probably the most common question I get asked. I mean, obviously, you know, our August has been great so far. But the Northwest here in the Seattle area, we get about 70% the annual sunlight of Los Angeles every year. And so that's a lot of solar to take advantage of. Everyone has some roof space usually that they can put to good use. So we do very well here. Our summer days are a lot longer than other areas in the country. So that makes up for some of our shorter, darker days in the winter.
Right. Well, speaking of that, we live here in Washington, so we get some rain once in a while.
Just a little.
What happens? I know that's probably a common question too. What happens with solar when it's cloudy and raining?
Yeah, that's a great question. So first of all, I always joke the rain is, you know, our own natural cleaning system for the panels.
Love
it helps
that.
keep them clean and ready to absorb sunlight when it does come out. But a lot of times people think that the solar is not going to do anything if they're not in direct sunlight, and that's not correct. They actually produce power even when it's overcast. It's kind of like if you're on vacation somewhere and it's overcast, you can still get a sunburn.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing with solar. Those UV rays are still making it through the clouds. It's going to produce less on a cloudy day than it does on a sunny day. On average, a clear day compared with a cloudy day, you'll see about 10 to 20% of your total production on that cloudy day
mm-hmm.
compared with one of our ideal solar production days.
10 to 20% less.
No, 10 to 20% of the total.
Oh,
of a
God.
Clear
okay,
sunlight.
I was going to say 10 to 20% less. That's not that bad. Okay, 10 to 20%
it's a little
total.
More of a reduction
okay,
than that.
Got it.
The nice thing about solar, too, is what we specialize in and what most people do in a developed area is what we call a grid tie system.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are connected to the power grid. On those cloudy days, they don't experience any difference in the house. The grid is going to make up whatever difference of power demand that they have.
Okay.
So I sometimes get asked, well, you know, am I going to have flickering lights or, you know, any sort mm-hmm. of inconvenience in my home because I have solar? And the answer is no. Everything operates exactly the same. You won't notice any difference in the home. You'll just notice that your bill is smaller every month.
Yeah, not a bad thing. Can you talk about what's new, what's going on new in the world of solar? Are there some sales tax exemptions, pricing changes, and how that impacts the overall investment?
Definitely. So 2013 has been a great year for the industry. We've continued to see awesome growth. We've already done more installs this year than we have in all of 2012. So that's
a lot of that because of the incentives or just
yes,
the education?
Yes, because
of
the incentives. Okay. And there was a end date this year. Currently, solar is sales tax exempt. So that's almost a 10%
wow.
savings. The total install, everything is free of sales tax. But that was set to expire June 30th of 2013. So a lot of people were making the move to go solar because they were anticipating an overnight almost 10% increase in their investment to go solar.
But it got extended.
On July 1st.
Like everything else.
Great. They did announce that extension. It's great for stimulating our business for a couple months. But everyone that was still, you know, kind of on the fence was really excited to get that news.
So how long is the extension
like
for?
Another year?
No, it's actually for 5 years. So they extended it through 2018.
Oh,
so
my gosh.
It's great news for the industry as a whole. Washington is committed to looking into alternative sources of power to really diversify how the Northwest meets their power needs. And so that 5-year extension was a great just testament that, you know, the industry is going to be pretty solid for the coming years.
That's awesome.
So, and then I was going to say the other thing that has changed recently, we do have a local solar manufacturer up in Marysville who's been around since about 2008. Every year they've become more efficient. They've grown. They make an awesome panel. They announced July 1st as well, new pricing. So between the new pricing, which was decreased from what it was before, and the sales tax exemption, solar has a stronger case than ever, really, for the way that the numbers work out.
Wow, that's awesome.
So, you know, you've been in here a couple of times, and I don't know if I've ever asked you this question, but is there, when you look at a map of Washington, is there certain counties or even certain neighborhoods that you could see, like, if you were to dot, like, every place you install the solar? Like, what does that map look like with if you were to drop pins, you know?
Well,
is it just completely sporadic, or do you really see, like, certain neighborhoods are really going big with solar versus others?
So it's interesting. It's pretty sporadic, actually, because most of the people that are doing solar, at least in the last 2 or 3 years, have been the first in their neighborhoods to do an install. But what we've seen in the last probably 6 months is that the awareness is starting to be there. People see their neighbors installing solar. They get curious. They want to know, well, if they think that's a good idea, maybe I should look into it. And so we have different neighborhoods like Kenmore. One of the Kenmore neighborhoods we've worked in now has 7 solar installs in just a small neighborhood. There's Shoreline has some concentration. The Fremont Ballard neighborhoods of Seattle definitely have some solar concentration. But honestly, we've done work in almost every city, you know, in the Northwest, and we definitely have representation in every county.
That's
so
awesome.
I think it depends more on just the homeowners and their awareness of solar and getting excited about looking into it.
Yeah. So Amy, what about solar leasing? What is that? And is it available in Washington?
Really good question. We get asked that a lot. Solar leasing is not available in Washington.
Okay.
The way that the incentives work, Washington State will pay a solar system owner an incentive check once per year that can only be paid to the direct owner of the system. So the way leasing works, it's a third party who comes in, purchases the system, and basically the homeowner or the business owner is leasing their roof space to this third party investor.
Oh, got
it. In Washington, that the incentive cannot be paid to a third party.
Got it.
The benefit or the reason that leasing is advertised and has a lot of success in other states is that you can do solar for zero out of pocket, have solar on your roof, get a benefit of a slightly decreased electric bill. But what I think the drawback to leasing is just that in those scenarios, the third party investor takes all of the incentives. The homeowner does not get any of the incentives. They don't get the increased property value aspect because they don't own the solar panels on their roof. They're rented, essentially.
Yeah, makes sense.
And so if someone's staying in their home for longer than 5 years, I don't think leasing makes a lot of sense. If they're only going to be in the home for 2 or 3 years and they like the idea of solar and they want a little bit of a lower bill, that can make sense in other states, but we don't have that option available.
Kind of like if you're going to keep your car short term, lease it, and you want to keep it longer term, buy it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and you touched on this a couple of minutes ago, and maybe I just didn't hear you right, but what exactly are the incentives?
Good question. Yeah. So I was kind of vague about those, but there are federal and state incentives in Washington. At the federal level, it's a 30% income tax credit. And I found that most people seem to be pretty aware of that incentive. The sales tax exemption was pretty heavily marketed as soon as that was extended.
Sure.
The incentive that I find most people not realizing they can actually take advantage of is what we call our production incentive. So in Washington, there's a separate meter. It looks like a utility meter that's installed, but that meter logs every kilowatt hour of electricity coming from the solar panels off the roof. And then the state will actually write a check to the owner of that system once per year. The rate that they're paying is 15 cents per kilowatt hour as a base. Or if a homeowner or business owner elects to use made in Washington product, that incentive will jump to 54 cents per kilowatt hour. That's for everything that comes off the roof, even if they use it in the home themselves.
So you mean, okay. When you say made in Washington, so you're talking about if they were to purchase solar panels, let's say, from this Marysville company.
Correct.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. And there's two options in Washington. There's, you know, definitely some pros and cons going both directions, which is something that just comes with the education process, I think, with solar. But that incentive check makes a huge difference because the going rate of power in Washington is not that high compared to a lot of other areas in the country who pay an average of 10 cents per kilowatt hour. So with this incentive, you're changing your net benefit of solar from just the savings on your bill of that 10 cents to anywhere between 25 and 65 cents when you add that incentive from the state and your bill savings together.
Huge, huge incentives.
Yeah. And so the average check can be anywhere between $500 and $3,000 a year, sometimes greater if someone does a lot of panels, but it makes a significant difference in how those cost savings calculate out.
So, Amy, can you talk about the development of the industry since solar is relatively a new technology? Should listeners wait or should they be investing right now?
It's a really good question. Solar often gets lumped into that category of computers, cell phones, cameras.
Interest rates.
Yeah, interest rates.
I know, or should we wait?
And
okay, a little bit different.
Yeah, a little different, but similar, I guess. That question is there, you know, what happens if I wait 6 months? Is that actually going to be better for me or not? And solar is actually a fairly mature technology. It's been around since the 50s and 60s. The way that panels are made today is the same basic manufacturing process as it was 50 years ago. Of course, we've improved on our efficiencies of manufacturing. Cost of panels have come down, but it's not something that's changing every 3 months. If you wait a year, you might see 5 watts per panel increase, which is not very much. So really, I don't think it's worth waiting for at all. The way that our incentives break down right now, it's anywhere when you add up those incentives I mentioned earlier, your installation is somewhere between 50 and 80% covered just by the incentives. So that's the 30% tax credit and then the sum of those incentive checks from the state. Those go through 2020. So we've got just shy of 7 years. So every time someone waits a year, they're foregoing, you know, anywhere between that $1,000 to $3,000 incentive check.
Sure.
That's a fixed end date. It's not something that's kind of the sliding scale of you get 6 or 7 years of it whenever you choose to install. Yeah. So we've seen a lot of people in the last 6 months to a year who have thought about solar for the last 5 years or so actually pull the trigger and do the install because they see the value of doing it now versus waiting.
So call that an action. I mean, Amy and her company does free consultations, not just for our listeners here on the Money Hour, but that's what their company does. Pick up the phone, give our show a call, 1-888-987-0570. Again, 1-888-987-0570 or online at themoneyhour.com. And call to action is have a consultation. It doesn't cost anything. Find out what the cost is, what it can do for your cost savings and just get an idea and be educated.
Exactly. It's actually super easy. Most of the work we can do kind of a preliminary proposal over the phone. Satellite technology actually helps us out a lot. We can see a lot of roofs through Google Earth and other things like that. And so it's usually about 5 to 10 minutes. You can go through how the incentives work specifically for your home or business. It's no obligation. And really solar is something that I believe is an education process. Not every person I talk to is solar a good fit for.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things where it has to be right for the person that we're talking
to. And
even
I just want to see you get up on the roof because you do that. You don't look like a get up on the roof type of girl, but you get
I
up
do.
On
I
the
carry
roof.
My ladder around. Yeah. It's up on a roof last night. You know, it's pretty fun. It keeps it interesting.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, well, in regards to pulling the trigger, I was just going to say that it doesn't sound like the technology is advancing every single year. So that's not really an excuse to wait. One could argue that, you know, the cost of the panels sounds like could be going down right, as they improve.
As the incentives go away.
But then again, you're kind of like, okay, well, yeah, should I wait this year or next year? Maybe the costs are going to be a little bit less. But then that's a year that you've postponed actually having savings.
The cost, the savings.
And getting the incentives and the ability to make some money from the state. So when you kind of, I think it just all boils down to the numbers, right? Just like what we do in mortgage.
Just like everything else. If it makes sense,
look
why
at the numbers.
Wait?
If it makes sense, go for it. If it doesn't, don't.
Exactly.
Yep.
So let's talk about the roof.
Okay.
What is the best type, you know, for solar to go onto, I guess?
So there's really no roofing material that would be concerned with solar. There's different types of flashings and mounting hardware for every type of roof out there. In terms of the orientation of the roof, of course, south facing is best. We're pretty far north here in the U.S. So the sun stays south of us year-round, even on the summer solstice. It's a little south. But actually, a west or an east-facing roof is also a good candidate. The efficiency difference in terms of performance from a south to a west-facing roof is sometimes as little as 5%. So most roofs have some space on them that are a good candidate for solar. Of course, we also want to be looking at things around the home that could cause shade on the roof. Solar does not work very well when it's in the shade. So that's a big part of just doing a good solar design is looking at, you know, is there maybe a spot off the roof that could be a better candidate for solar than on the roof?
Yeah. Well, we've got you coming out to our house. We have no shade at our house. So I'm really interested to see what solar is going to do for Dave and I. Amy, thank you again very much. It's always nice seeing you. It's always nice having your expertise, advice, and our listeners and saving money. And can't wait to have you come back.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much. Yeah, it's always good to be here.
Seeing you again. Yep. Well, this is Mike Mercer signing off for The Mortgage Diva, Ms. Tina Mitchell.
And this is Tina Mitchell signing off for The Mortgage Master, Mike Mercer. And thank you again, everyone, to all of our listeners for being here this Sunday. And we'll thank you in advance for coming back next Sunday right here on 570 KVI. Same time, same place. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, guys. Have a great week.
Isn't it time you start getting what you want? I'm Jason Watacha, owner of Noble Ridge Construction, specialist in custom home building and remodeling. It's time to make yourself happy and create the home that fits your desires and style. That process starts by visiting us at NobleRidgeConstruction.com or follow us on Facebook to get inspired. You can also see featured custom lots available, architects, and signature series homes for sale by us. NobleRidgeConstruction.com. That's NobleRidgeConstruction.com. Dreams begin here.
Are you behind on your mortgage payments and unsure about the road ahead? Magnum Law Group helps families just like yours navigate through the foreclosure avoidance process. Are you underwater on your home and unsure what to do? Magnum Law Group will help you understand your options. Are you facing foreclosure and need to stop a trustee sale? Magnum Law Group has success in doing this and may be able to help you too. If you're tired of dealing with the banks and getting turned down for loan modification, Magnum Law Group will take on the banks for you and lead you through the process for the best possible outcome. They lead the competition with superior knowledge and expertise.
This is Craig from Magnum. You can reach us at 425-605-6393 or at www.magnumlawgroup.com. See you at the next seminar.
The preceding program is paid for by Cobalt Mortgage. Cobalt Mortgage, Inc., NMLS 35653, is an equal opportunity housing lender. Tina Mitchell, MLO number 145420, and Mike Mercer, MLO number 175644, are licensed loan originators with Cobalt Mortgage. Go to cobaltmortgage.com or call 1-877-220-4663 for cost information.